You're listening to Curiosity Invited with David Bryan here on LA Talk Radio.
Hello, my name is David Bryan, and this is Curiosity Invited, a podcast inspired by endless curiosity. Tune in for an open-minded conversation about interesting and important things. Hello, and welcome to Curiosity Invited. My name is David Bryan, and today I have the great pleasure of speaking with Rod Morrison. Rod Morrison is a local Wyoming farmer. He's been a farmer, fourth-generation farmer, and he has thought, as many farmers do, but thought in interesting ways about our food, how we grow it, how it can become sustainable, and how, in all sorts of ways, what we are currently doing is taking us in the wrong direction. But he has an idea for how to go in the right direction, and a very interesting conversation. I suspect part one of a multiple part conversation. I hope you enjoy it. Rod Morrison, hello.
Hey, how are you?
Hello, I'm good. Welcome to Curiosity Invited. Appreciate you you giving up some time to have this conversation. And I already told people that you are a fourth generation farmer. So that means
yes,
dad, grandfather, great grandfather. And so that means you grew up on a farm. And you grew up?
I grew up in a small agricultural community, but was surrounded by farms, which my grandfather and his brothers were all farmers. And when they moved from Missouri to Wyoming, so and they were farmers there. So
and that's where you grew up. You grew up in Wyoming. And in this area, in the area of Powell area.
Yes. Yeah. I was born and raised in Powell.
No kidding. Wow. How'd you turn out like you turned out?
You know, that's a really good question.
Yeah.
Other than I spent a lot of time in the wilderness around here. So most of my my opinions about how I see the world was formed from those times spent back near Yellowstone Park.
Mm. So did you get the farming bug early? Like you know, early on, you knew by golly.
I spent a lot of time with my grandfather. He was a farmer about 3 miles out of town. And I spent a lot of time with him and his friends and sitting on his tractor, riding up and down the field and just being a big part of everything that happened on the farm. And then whenever we got together as a family with the great uncles and great aunts, and it was always done on the farm. So we had chores to do before we had a celebration. So it was always a big part of my life.
Yeah. And then you went off to college or did you ever do
that? No, I typically in Wyoming, you farm in the summer and then you work the oil patch in the fall and the winter. And so that's kind of the economic game here in Wyoming. You farm in it, and then when it gets cold, you jump on a drilling rig.
And somehow I remember that you, maybe I got this wrong, that You were adept not just at farming but at a bunch of other things, business and the political scene and where did that come from? Or did that come from farming?
Well, it comes from farming. It comes from the fact that you have to participate, you have to get involved. Either that or you get run over. And it's always been a part of what I've done. I was also in high school, I was a member of FFA, Future Farmers of America. Had an ag teacher that taught six generation, or probably five generations of ag students in the Bighorn Basin in Powell. So he was very well connected in the whole state of Wyoming. And so I got to watch him and how he was effective around people. And no matter where he went, people knew who he was. And it was, you know, it didn't matter if he was a senator or a representative of the state, they knew who Faye Thompson was. And, you know, he always had their ear, and he always made a point of letting us boys know that, you know, this is how the system works, and you need to be part of it.
And ag classes or ag study in high school, what was it a study of?
It was every aspect of agriculture from the standpoint of marketing. You know, you're an entrepreneur, so you have to look for things that are going to make your life easier and more economical. And you're always changing and developing new things and trying to make things better for both the farm and the family and the community.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So fast forward, at some point let me back up again first. So your family farmed mostly crops and what?
Correct. Yeah. Pretty much in the olden days. And when I say olden days, that'd be probably 45 to 50 years ago. It was still beans, barley, and sugar beets. So,
right.
And all my uncles and my grandfather raised those crops.
And so did you? Look, when you started farming,
I turned my farm certified organic.
Right. But how and why? Like, you know, here you are, you're in the farm world, you're surrounded by traditional Wyoming farmers. They do it their way. And then it's your turn and you decide early on, I want to go organic.
Yeah, there's some holes in the back of that story that probably need a little filled in. I went back to college at age 30, got my degree in business, and took that all over the world, mostly in construction. But I got to experience 8 years of working with DOE, Department of Energy, and then I spent 2.5 years overseas working on a geothermal power project. And through all those changes and places that I experienced, life became very apparent to me that we needed to slow down and maybe hold the clock or turn the clock backwards, so to speak, from the standpoint of how we live our lives and how we grow food. And that's the reason when I came back to Wyoming, I wanted to get involved in agriculture.
Okay, so I guess I want to dig in there. So then you wanted to get involved in agriculture, but you wanted to do it organically. Why? Was it entrepreneur? Like, ooh, there's a niche here that's not been filled, or what was it?
It was all those things you said. From a business perspective, the idea of being able to step into the market of food, you know, gives you a huge opportunity because we all eat. And so so market size was not an issue. It's a fairly large segment of the human population that eats. But the thing that really got me interested in it was being able, I was part of the Wyoming Business Council when I came back to Wyoming, and the governor at the time wanted to do something for farmers in Wyoming. So that was kind of my edict, was to see what might be out there that Wyoming could participate in. And this idea of organics was just getting a lot of traffic and traction through Congress. And I got to meet the people that spent almost 26 years developing the standard. and getting it through Congress. And in that process of learning about organics, it became very apparent to me from the business standpoint that this was a huge opportunity for farmers to connect their farm to the consumer directly.
What do you mean by that? What does that mean?
Well, basically, that's what we were doing back when my grandfather was farming. He was selling most of his production to companies that were selling it to another company who was selling it to another company. You know, that's the industrial agricultural part of food production. Organics lends itself more to a local production, but at the same time, it's trying to fit the mold of today's sophisticated distribution systems. But the beauty of the organic standard is the farmer owns the seal. The certified organic seal goes down to the land, so it starts there. So it gives the farmer a real advantage in the marketplace because he can basically set his price again. He's not a price taker, he's a price maker.
So you said it took 26 years roughly for that designation to be a legally recognized designation.
In fact, it's the only food label that has legal standing. All other food labels are just marketing. Organics as a standard has an inspection that has to be done. You have a certifier, and they make sure that you're in line with what the organic standard is all about. And you do that once a year to obtain the seal that you can then put on the product that you're going to take to the marketplace. My farm can be tested at any time. My certifier can come in, or whoever, and inspectors can pull samples and check everything. And every year I'm inspected. Every year I recertify. So it's a process that works. It's all private. The government has nothing to do with it. The government has the government wrote the standard, wrote the rules, and passed the law and made it part of the Federal Register, which means it's a statute. It's, you know, you can go to prison for using the word organic when you're not. So it has a lot of pull, a lot of power in the marketplace.
But the certification is tested by, sort of managed by, a private organization that the government has, you know, blessed to be the watchdog.
Correct. And there's several of these private agencies, certifiers out there. So, you know, from a standpoint of a marketer or packager, processor, farmer, there's quite a selection of certifiers.
And you know, I apologize for asking questions that may be really basic. What sorts of things do they test for, right? I mean, is it chemicals in the soil? Is it water? I mean, what is it? What are the hurdles you have to jump over and the hoops you have to jump through in order to get that certification? And I don't mean you have to give me all of them, but.
No, it's fairly simple, really. If your farm is being farmed conventionally, by that, I mean you were using herbicides, pesticides, and petroleum-based fertilizers, then you have to be able to farm the property for 3 years organically. So basically, you pull it out of the industrial ag form of production and move it into an organic production plan. And then after 3 years, you become certified organic.
Assuming those petroleum products don't show up. And
one of the things that I discussed with the people that wrote the standard, I really said, man, that is a huge barrier of entry for some conventional farmer to shut down his production and farm organically for 3 years, I mean, you're just not going to be able to walk in the bank and explain to your banker that you need, you know, more time to.
Why you can't make your payments around, for 3 years. Yeah.
So at the same time, it was a huge negative. It was a huge positive for me because I was like, whoa, okay, I think I can swing this, uh-huh. You know, from my standpoint.
Yeah. Yeah. And okay. So it gives it a marketing advantage, but it's the opposite of prison, right? Like, you know, prison's easy to get in, hard to get out.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Once you get in it, you do not want to make a mistake and get kicked out of it. It's yeah. really a commitment that you make. And once you're in it, and once you learn how to, well, that's the thing, you know, I spent a lot of time trying to think about what it was I could do in my farm here in Wyoming. And out of all those questions and working it in my mind, I came up with livestock. Meats was a,
so organic
was a huge opportunity.
Is it where you started farming? Well, or is that ranching? I don't know what it is, but.
Yeah, that's franching. I call it franching.
Franching, yeah. And okay, so you started meat, and tell us that.
Yeah,
story.
I actually put together. We a small group of us put together a USDA grant to look at the opportunity, and because I was on the business council, because I had the inside the state, it became very easy to get the grant. I mean, we wrote the grant, got awarded the grant, and then took off with it with what we what was granted was a business plan. We built a business plan, and we had a real plan to put a USDA processing plant near Powell. You know, all the stars were lining up, so. It looked like a really good play,
and why was that?
Then we got politics.
Yeah, but what? Why was? We'll get there. But what? Why was that? Why was that? Why was that a significant piece to the how to be a successful organic meat producer? Like, why did you need this plant there? You could still raise organic beef and sell it somewhere. Yeah.
No, that's the problem. I mean, if you dive into food, you will understand that food is the most political, well-regulated, huge barriers of entry. And you just can't, you know, you would think, wow, I could grow a carrot and take it to town and sell it. No, that's not the way it goes. And it's the same thing with a beef cow. You raise a beef cow, and if you don't have USDA processing, meaning it's inspected by USDA, you can't sell it across state lines.
You can't sell
it. In Wyoming, who produces about 1.5 million head of cattle a year, and these are mostly calves, the producers had no opportunity to go to the marketplace because of the structure of which the meat system is built.
So where is the nearest processing plant?
Well, I was able to locate one in Columbus, Montana, which is like, about 160 miles northeast or northwest of here.
And does this processing plant, in order for you to be able to say, I'm selling certified organic meat, does the processing plant have to be in some way certified organic? Like,
oh yeah, no. They had to be certified organic. In fact, when I met with them, they weren't really tickled about the idea. And I said, well, to get you going, I'll pay for the certification. So I paid for their certification, and we started processing livestock off my farm.
Wow. That's
yeah
wild.
And we sold it all on the internet.
You sold it directly, right? I mean, from the processing plant, it was you. You still owned the meat afterwards. They processed
it. That's right. We were vertically integrated. We owned it womb to tomb, pasture to plate, farm to fork. So And it was a very effective money-making operation.
There you are selling this stuff on the internet. And so why are you not still selling this stuff on the internet?
Well, because we couldn't get the numbers to the point that we needed them. We couldn't get producers on board to the idea. We couldn't shift the paradigm on the production side. You know, we had a few. There were a few local cow calf producers that went, yeah,
that went organic.
I'm organic. That's exactly what I didn't know I could do this. You know, yeah, here's a good certifier we work with. Get on the phone, give them a call, get yourself certified, which they did. And we bought their calves mainly because they were a cow calf operator, meaning they already had the numbers on their farms that they needed to make it work.
Yeah.
And we would buy their calves and put them on my farm and feed them out, basically.
Got it.
Run them on my pastures.
Got it. Okay. So, but what made it not, where was the gap in the dollars? Because you were selling them, there was a demand. I mean, Were you just not able to charge enough to make the money, or?
Oh no. We were selling the bone, the tongue, the heart, the bone, the joints, everything but the moo. So, and we were getting substantial amount of money for those offal products that are typically given to the process, the major processors in America. I mean, basically the offal on a cow pays the processing bill for the major processors. So the meat's free.
Yeah. And okay, so why didn't you, I still don't get where the gap is.
Well, we were making money and we were doing okay, but it was more of a business problem because we'd spend time with marketing, time and money doing social media and working the internet, and we'd sell out, and then we're sitting there,
and you couldn't produce enough.
Couldn't, wow. You know, the demand outstripped the supply, and no matter what we did with price, they paid it.
Yeah.
It was,
they kept wanting it. And there probably were producers around the country that could. No, there were not.
None. No, it was us. We were the only ones.
Really?
Yeah, I had a phone call from Amazon. We actually met them in Chicago when they were doing the Amazon Fresh before they bought Whole Foods.
Yeah.
And we were the only
They said, we want your organic meat.
We want it all. So we just like, okay, well, let's see what we can do. And we used that to help our search engines, you know, go through our roof on our website. And you know, there's advantages and disadvantages, but literally they wanted to own us. But
right.
Once they figured out what it was going to take to own us, they decided that they didn't want to be ranchers.
So that's amazing. So wait, is there no source for organic meat now? If somebody wants organic meat,
I think you'd really play. There's some. I mean, when I was in Chicago at the FMI, when I first started this whole process.
Say what FMI is.
Yeah, Food Marketing Institute.
Got it.
It's a huge food trade show.
That
was happening in Chicago every year. And the fancy food show was part of it. I mean, it was two floors of 64 acres showrooms that were just full of food. I was the only organic there with my 10 head of cows. And after 5 years of being there, well, no, I guess it was like the third year in a row that I went to the FMI. I had the vice president of marketing of Campbell's Soups. I had the meat buyer from Walmart come to my table, and I had the pork CEO for Tyson come to my table.
And they wanted everything. They wanted more and more and more.
Well, they were hearing from the consumer, I want organic, organic, organic. And they was like, what? Where is this at? You know? So we were there for 3 years, but they never came down to our level. They, you know, we were in the basement and everything else was above us. So yeah. It wasn't until the third year that we started seeing corporate food.
Finally wandered down, yeah.
So
today, if somebody goes, says, you know, I want to go organic, but I'm not giving up meat, and they can't really do it. Or they can. They can go to the local farmer. No, they can't. Well, I guess if they're certified organic.
Yeah, you're saying a consumer or the producer? I guess I missed your question.
Take your pick. Like if a customer, if somebody who would shop at Whole Foods wants organic meats, where do they go? Does Whole Foods have organic meat now or no?
Some, but not enough to service what's out there demand wise.
Amazing.
I mean, I've whenever I'm in Chicago, when I was in Chicago for another event, another reason, I went to Whole Foods in downtown and was looking at the meat market, the meat section of the there was chicken there. There was organic poultry, no beef. They were selling a grass-fed, which from the standpoint of this, there is no standard for grass-fed.
Right.
It's one of those
that really doesn't mean anything other than...
Exactly. Hey, it's marketing. Yeah.
Most cows eat grass, so show me a cow that hasn't been fed grass.
The problem is corn is a grass. Yeah. So, you know, if you're feeding silage in a feedlot, that's grass-fed.
Yeah, that's
really a pasture rule. The pasture rule, and that is owned by certified organic.
Nice.
The only ones who, yeah.
Got it. Wow, I guess I didn't, the first time we spoke about this, I didn't really get that. That's astonishing.
Yeah, it's amazing, the opportunity. It's just like, wow, when I started, you know, I was like, How is this going to grow? How is this going to happen? You know, but the thing is that it can happen. It's just a little bit upside down. So that's why it's kind of weird.
I'm surprised that one of the, you know, I'm hopefully we'll get to talk a little bit at least about that, or maybe that's part two, but I'm surprised that one of the four, maybe there's more than four, maybe there's less, giant food.
Well, there's four.
But I'm surprised that one of them doesn't see the opportunity to say, oh, yeah, let's do that, and just pour a ton of money and energy into it and go for it.
I've thought about that. You know, okay, how come they're not doing it? How come they are not doing it? Well, it's more complicated as you dive into it. You know, these people just want to continue to own the middle.
Yeah.
You know, they want to be able to buy it at the lowest price and sell it at the highest price. So as long as they're able to do that with what's being done today,
what's the incentive?
Why would I, why should I, you know, it's working for me. Yeah. Why should I get in the way of it? And that's the reason that they don't want anybody to succeed in it, is because, and that's part of the politics of Wyoming. It blew my mind.
Hmm. Amazing.
Really did.
Yeah. But I know that you moved, you haven't forsaken the organic quest, but you have moved away from meat and toward that thing that I can see in the picture behind you, right?
My freeze dryer.
The freeze dryer. It says freeze dried
yes.
grains or beans or
anything. I can take a meal and freeze dry it. And it can contain meat. We want to do both a vegetarian and a meat-based meal. So, because you got to have both on the farm. You know, you can't have a tomato without some manure. So you got to have all those pieces together on the farm to make it work and to be able to have everything that you need from a human standpoint to move forward. You know, we're great calorie consumers. Us humans.
Yeah. Well, let's maybe we can shift into that piece of the conversation. It's a little bit of a, I mean, I know it's connected. It's certainly connected in your mind. But it's a shift conceptually, I think, at least for those unschooled, the calorie conversation. We had an extensive conversation about calories, and could you unwind that a little bit? Really, we had a sort of a far-ranging conversation about a calorie-based economics as opposed to a dollar-based economics, and why that does or doesn't make sense. So,
right. And I think the conversation that you and I are having was basically about climate change, you know, and how what are we doing, or what can we do to mitigate what we are doing, not even considering what the impact could be, you know, not even being aware, or not even thinking about what might be the possibilities, like what we're seeing today. So and then being in the food business and getting to meet people that are working hard to change how we see food, how we grow food, how we distribute food, it became a big part of their whole storyline. Which, when I learned the story, I was like, "Oh my God, I can't believe I! What in the hell was I? You know, where was I? Where was my brain?" You know, because it's pretty common sense, really.
What? And talk about that. Give us some of that.
Sense. You know, it just starts with the sun. That's all we have. That's all the energy we get every day is what comes from the sun in the 12 hours that it's shining on this planet of Earth that we all live on. So, you know, it all just starts with that. That's everything that we have. And that's what grew the carbon. That's what created the carbon that we have now in the earth in the form of coal, oil, and natural gas. And that was all, you know, you can just simply think about it as being stored sunshine. It's very stored, very rich in calorie, very rich in energy. And we've had a lot of fun with it in the last 85 years. And when you start to look at those numbers of calories that are involved in the production of food, the distribution of food, the marketing of food, the storage of food, you know, the freezers, the heaters, all the energy that it takes to put it in a bag or a box and move it down the road. You take those numbers and you put them together and you go, holy moly, wow, okay. And how many calories am I getting in that box once I get it? You know, they don't equate at all. It's probably somewhere between, I bet somewhere between 5,000 and 7,000 calories, energy calories, to get one food calorie.
One food consumable by a human being to sustain him or herself calorie.
Yes.
And okay, so I'm asking a question not because I'm disagreeing, but I'm asking the question. So, but I can't eat any of those 7,000 calories. So why is that a fair comparison?
That's a great question. You're right, you're not really eating those things, but all those things are required to get it to your mouth,
right?
All those things, the electricity, the fuel, the gas, the lights, you know, all that energy is energy that, yes, you cannot consume on its own. But all those energies are used to get that food calorie into your body. And in fact, if you just, you know, it's very simple. If you just, every time you went to the store yourself as a human, you know, calculate the energy that, you know, that opened the door when you walked into the air-conditioned building and went into that freezer case and grabbed, you know, a couple of TV dinners, and then, you know, just, and you just start thinking about the amount of energy that went into all that alone, and you'll see that you're already 20 to 1
mm-hmm.
just in your own individual ability to go gather food. You're expending probably somewhere between 20 and 200 calories per food calorie just to perform that activity.
And though, okay, so what's the problem with that? So what?
Well, all those calories are limited. You know, they're a limited resource. You know, they're not something that just comes. Sure, when the sun comes up, we get energy. You know, we can certainly put up solar panels and change some of those things to bring those numbers in line. But you still can't. When you start using carbon fuels, that's when the exponential comes in, and it just becomes out of whack. And you know, petroleum-based products, they're a very resource-sensitive, demand-sensitive product. And as we're seeing right now with inflation, I mean, inflation's totally driven by energy prices. There's no other reason for it.
So if that's how I get my food now, if I want to do something about that, what does the world look like after Rod Morrison has magically changed the world and turned it into a saner world? Well, what does that process look like now? I mean, what does that process look like later?
Right. I'd rather just start with my backyard, but I tend to agree with you. It's the bigger picture, you know. But from your own backyard, the best thing you can do is grow your own food, you know, sustain yourself and the people around you with what you can do locally. Other than, you know, and the bigger picture is the climate change picture, you know, this whole idea that we're putting megatons of CO2 into the atmosphere in the unconscious state that we believe nature will somehow put it back in the ground. Well, you know, look at the clock that it took to get that to happen. Right. I mean, it was billions of years. Well, we're burning it at a rate that far exceeds that time frame.
You're saying so people ought to grow their own food. Well, what's the
The local answer.
Yeah.
I'm saying from the standpoint of a bigger picture answer is that we use the calorie as currency. No, I think it's really pretty easy. There, from a food standpoint, it works pretty well because we would price the calorie like one penny. Our currency, we'd say one penny buys one food calorie. So for $20, you can buy 2,000 calories, which, you know, supports most people
in a day.
In life.
Yeah.
In a day. Right. Right. So $20 buys you a day's worth of food. But the other part of that is if you price the calorie, meaning that every energy that we use, then we're going to price it based on the present value of a food calorie. So that one penny then translate into one calorie of electricity, one calorie of gas, gasoline, diesel, carbon.
Okay. So if that's the economic model, then me spending that $20 for that 2,000 calories, let's, you know, whatever it is, it's really required, you know, 20 times that in calories to make that. So suddenly the price of that 2,000 calories of food goes up significantly.